rise. The Chief Judge and the Associate Judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Well, good afternoon. It's a great pleasure for the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces to sit here today at the University of Wisconsin. Thank you for the invitation. The court will call United States v. Kefauver, and what we're going to have is 20 minutes from the appellant, 10 minutes from amicus, then 20 minutes from the government, 10 minutes from amicus, and then rebuttal, just so everybody knows where we're headed. Thank you very much. Please.
Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, may please the court. My name is Captain Patrick Scuderi.
Check one thing. Can you hear in the back? Okay, you're good.
No problem, sir. My name is Captain Patrick Scuderi, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Potter, we represent Specialist Levi Kefauver in this matter. Your Honor, this was a search, not a sweep, and an inevitable discovery saves none of the evidence. It's a fact-intensive inquiry this court's got to partake in, and I'd like to draw the court's attention to four specific facts.
Could you speak up a little?
Yes, Your Honor. The first fact is, for about 3 hours and 20 minutes, law enforcement surveilled the Kefauver residence, so no one come in, no one come out, no sign of any movement within the house.
But can you? How long was the house under surveillance?
It was approximately 3 hours and 20 minutes. The start time is a little unclear.
So the house was under surveillance before the package was delivered?
Yes, Your Honor. According to Special Agent Roach, after he left the meeting with the military magistrate, he set a surveillance team.
And is the lack of clarity because the parties don't agree, or because the facts just are unclear?
The facts are just unclear from the court, from the record, Your Honor. The second fact I'd like to call the point to court's attention to is when the box was delivered, Investigator Lamp knocked on the front door and testified no one was home. He didn't testify there was no answer. He testified that no one was home. Second, this 8-pound box containing a lot of marijuana sat on a front porch for 45 minutes. An investigator testified that it was scanned in as received, and if the recipient wanted, they could find out that it was delivered to the door whenever they wanted to. And fourth, Special Agent Roach's only reason for conducting a sweep was because it was SOP. And that he stated a couple times in the record, Joint Appendix at 40, 42 to 43, 62, 86, and 190 to 191. And this was a search, Your Honor. Special Agent Roach looked in some places that people couldn't reasonably be found, according to Maryland v. Bowie. First, he looked at the back of a headboard for drugs. Second, he looked in the top shelf of a closet to find a water pipe. Third, he found a box.
That was during the initial sweep or whatever.
The first time.
Whatever it is.
We could split it up, Your Honor, into the first time in the house and then the second time. This was during the first time. And then he also found boxes in the master bedroom and called Investigator Lamb from outside to come back inside and look at these boxes to see whether or not they were consistent with drug trafficking.
He didn't. In fairness, can't someone hide in a closet?
Yes, Your Honor. But when he moved the box, according to Hicks, just turning over a turntable was considered a search, not a sweep. And by looking at the box closer like that, where nobody could be found, that turns it into a search. And finally, Special Agent Roach testified twice that it was a search. He had to correct himself.
What are the limits on a sweep?
The limits on the sweep, Your Honor, are it's got to be a cursory inspection. It has to narrowly be confined to a cursory visual inspection of those places where a person might be hiding. It's a severe yet brief intrusion upon the cherished personal.
Well, is it persons might be hiding where? In the vicinity of the thing you're looking for, or in the house at large, or what?
It depends on the specific facts in the case, and in this case, the search was over. The search authorization to seize the box was over the moment they found the box.
The box was searched and seized. The box was searched for and seized.
Yes, it was immediately inside the house, Your Honor. And once it was found, the most they could have done under Chamel is the grab area.
Now, if it was immediately inside the door, but there was a stairway right near that area, to what extent could law enforcement go up those stairs and ensure there was no one upstairs who could pose a danger to them on the first floor?
Your Honor, they wouldn't be able to do that. Under Bowie, it's essentially a two-pronged test. First is the facts, that there has to be reasonable, articulable facts taken with the rational inferences from those facts. and that would warrant a reasonable law enforcement officer to believe that the area to be swept harbored individuals, and those individuals posed a threat.
Your issue there is that they had no reason to believe there were people in the house, or that they couldn't do it even if they might have thought people were in the house. Which way are you breaking on that?
My primary one, Your Honor, is that there's no reason to believe anyone's in the house, particularly when law enforcement testified no one was home. And the surveillance for 3 hours and 20 minutes, plus the 45 minutes, put the box in the front porch. No movement, no nothing. There's no reasonable, articulable belief.
Well, how did that person know, the one that went to the door, that nobody was home? Nobody responded, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't anybody in the house.
The only thing that you can glean from the record, Your Honor.
That was a conclusion on their part, but not a fact.
Yes, Your Honor, but he knocked on the door, and he's the person who can listen for anybody moving in the house, see a curtain move, see a light turn on and off, and he testified about none of that. Only that when he knocked on the door, no one was home. And that, taken into the totality of the circumstances, which the 3 hours and 20 minutes of viewing the house, the 45 minutes with the box in the front porch, there's no way you can articulate that somebody is there.
Which findings of fact in this area were clearly erroneous?
The key one, Your Honor, is the military judge didn't take into consideration the 3 hours and 20 minutes of surveillance. It's nowhere in his findings of fact. And that information in and of itself is pretty strong that nobody's there.
So it's an error by omission?
Yes, Your Honor. And then again, he testified twice that it was us, that it was a search, not a sweep. And finally,
what about the testimony where he said that the reason that they did it was to make sure that there was no one there that could pose a threat to them? I mean, isn't it a reasonable inference from that testimony that they thought that there might be someone there?
No, Your Honor. Bowie specifically addressed the government's argument that whenever law enforcement does an arrest in the house, you have to assume it's violent, and so therefore you should always be able to do a sweep. And the Supreme Court said no. You need reasonable, articulable belief that someone's in the home that poses a threat.
Do you need an arrest?
Under Bowie discusses the arrest, but the federal courts tend to discuss some of the other reasons that law enforcement are lawfully in a home. I believe amicus.
It the government's position that you don't need an arrest qua arrest?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Is a sweep an adjunct to an arrest only? Or do you have to have an arrest to engage in a legitimate
sweep? In the view
sweep?
Of appellant, do you need to have an arrest, or can it be a lawful action by law enforcement?
The way I read the case, Your Honor, if they're lawfully in the home, then you go into the Bowie analysis. So in this case, they were lawfully in the home.
Okay, so you don't need an arrest?
No, Your Honor, but the arrest...
You would break company with amicus on that particular point.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Do you break company with your amicus on that particular point?
I defer to their argument, okay. Your Honor. But even when they're in the home, they have to go through Bowie. And the facts in Bowie.
And counsel, just to be clear, my question isn't whether the officer can just say without anything more, oh, it's SOP, we always get to search the house. What I'm saying is when you have testimony from the officer that the reason we did the search was to make sure there was, because to protect the officers that were there. Okay, I mean, we do have that testimony in several places, and I think that you would agree that we take the facts in the light most favorable to the party that prevailed below.
Yes, Your Honor. Hawk, a Tenth Circuit case, discusses this, and they said that
the circuit is in a different place than everybody else on this issue.
Yes, Your Honor, but he should be given less deference, because the obligation for law enforcement is to have a reasonable, articulable belief. He never articulated a belief that anybody was in the home. Well, so just saying it's what we always do cuts that.
What about the statement from the stepson that cops should be killed, and he was relatively antagonistic toward them? Wouldn't that put a reasonable law enforcement officer coming into a drug situation, increase the vigilance?
Your Honor, Special Agent Roach testified that the primary reason that TCD was angry was to keep people out of the house. There are federal cases that discuss if somebody should scream into the house, say, cops are here, mom, dad, someone's at the door. But there's no testimony that he made any sound into the house. And that, even if he did, there's still 3 hours and 20 minutes of surveillance and testimony from law enforcement officers that no one was home.
But isn't that if not a threat, certainly a veiled threat? Cops should be killed.
And they took him into custody, Your Honor, and he was no longer a threat. Under Schimel, they might have been able to go in and grab and do the immediate grab area of where he was, which is right inside the door. There was testimony when they came up and entered the house, the door was still open and the keys were still in the keyhole. So the furthest he got in the house was maybe a few feet where he put the box down, assumingly. So that's the only area they would have been able to go into.
Can play you move this, on to...
Play this out.
I just want to move to inevitable discovery.
You know, that's where I'm going.
Okay.
Yeah. We ask the questions together. We're going to do every other word. Play this out. Let's say you prevail, that this is an unlawful search. Now what happens? Because there's the second search, there's dogs, there's various things. So what's your storyline and why?
That, of course, inevitable discovery doesn't apply here, Your Honor. For the inevitable discovery argument under Wicks, it's a prospective analysis, not a retrospective analysis.
First, why don't you walk us through how you perceive the facts? Because there is confusion over what was authorized, what was not authorized. So please lay out your version of the facts and then indicate to us why that does or does not result in inevitable discovery.
Your Honor, Special Agent Roach testified. He was asked the question on cross-examination. And you also stated that the scope of your search was the room containing the box itself, unless the working dogs in your pursuit of that box alerted to something else. Is that correct? Yes. The military magistrate also testified that once the box is in the home, and once you find the box, the only place you can look is where the box was or any place the dogs alerted in finding the box. The military judge at that trial, he ruled, and I'm arguing correctly, that once the box was found, the search was over. Going to get the dogs was superfluous. The whole purpose for the dogs was to find the box. It seems the military magistrate assumed they'd deliver the box and wait a little while, but they didn't. They went in immediately, and once it was found, right then and there, the search was over.
So your view is that the military magistrate anticipated that the dogs would be used in the search for the box?
Yes, Your Honor. Throughout his testimony, he discusses when the dogs are looking for the box, any place they alert, you may search. But the dogs weren't used because the box was found immediately.
Would you agree that there was some confusion on the part of the agents as to exactly what the scope of the search was? Didn't they testify that they actually believed that they had the authority to go in with the dogs?
There's a little bit of confusion, but it's cleared up on cross-examination when defense counsel specifically asked them, you can only go as far as the box. Once you find the box, the search was over. Because the whole purpose throughout the part-time military magistrate's testimony is to use the dog to find the box. So there's no reason for the dogs once the box is found.
What about the military judge's finding the next immediate step for any reasonable law enforcement officer would have been to request a search authorization of the whole residence?
For a reasonable law enforcement officer, which is the tacit admission by the judge that the law enforcement officer, Special Agent Roach, acted unreasonably. The court later on asked Special Agent Roach some hypotheticals, looking back, what would you have done? And that's not the analysis. Under Wicks, the court puts themselves in the shoes of the law enforcement officer at the time of the illegal activity, not looking back a year later at a suppression hearing. And at the time of the illegal activity, he was not attempting to get a warrant. He had contact with his trial counsel and the military magistrate, and he just didn't get one. And that's similar to the facts in Wicks. When law enforcement received the cell phone and the young lady had seen a couple of texts, they didn't just send the cell phone out for one search, they sent it out for three. Here there were two searches. And they had contact with their trial counsel and they didn't.
What about the fact that they thought they already had authorization from the magistrate?
That would be an unreasonable inference, Your Honor. It was clear, it's a little jumbled, but it's clear from the total testimony of Special Agent Roach and the part-time military magistrate that it was done once the box was found. Because the whole purpose, the part-time military magistrate testified that there was no probable cause to believe anything was in the house. That's why the box had to be delivered first. So assumingly, once the box was in the house, there's probable cause to believe the box in that is in the house. And once the whole purpose of the search authorization to find the box was effectuated.
Explain this. What was the purpose of the search authorization? In your view, the only purpose was to go in and get the box.
Yes, Your Honor.
They already had the box. But if they could not have searched past the box, why didn't they just, I mean, they had the box right there. They could have got a search authorization once the dog alerted on the box. Why go through all of this if there wasn't some indication that they had the ability to search beyond the box?
I can't speak for Agent Roach, Your Honor. It looks like he jumped the gun. As soon as the box went in, they conducted the search. I believe what the military magistrate envisioned was, again, waiting for the box to go into the house and waiting for maybe other people to come home and then conducting the sweep. But as soon as he went in, he found the box. And it's clear from the part-time military magistrate's testimony that the box was the purpose of the search.
Which they already had.
Once it goes in the house, you now have it connected to the house. When somebody brings it into the house, you now have a person connected to the box. It was a T key favor written on the box, not L. So they have an idea of who it might be.
But they can't search beyond anything once they find the box.
Yes, Your Honor.
It doesn't make much sense.
The The purpose of the box going into the house was testified by one of the government experts that when people take part in mailing the drugs, they track when it's delivered, where it goes. So if it's delivered at the wrong time, they just won't take it in. If it's delivered too early or too late, outside the typical delivery time. So once it goes in the house, it would lead one to believe they were expecting the package. So now have a constructive possession issue, it's in the house, and they can later get another search authorization.
That's testimony as to what generally happens, or did they have reason to believe that they were doing a time delivery here and the recipients would have been on the watch?
They did it assuming that it was a time delivery to make sure it was delivered all at the same time.
Why did they do the oral authorization for the search rather than do it in writing?
I couldn't tell you, Your Honor, but it seemed like they wanted to get the box to the house to see if somebody would come in. They didn't testify when the typical delivery was, but if you look, I'm sorry, I can't cite to the joint appendix or supplement the joint appendix, but it has the times of when all the other boxes were delivered. And if you look, it's right about the same time as all the other boxes being delivered.
If there's a notion of a time delivery and people waiting for it to arrive, why wouldn't that give rise to a reasonable inference if there was someone else in the house?
Because no one came out, Your Honor. If they were anticipating that it would be delivered and they were tracking it, they would have probably come out this is a bit of an assumption, but leaving 4 pounds of marijuana on a front porch isn't always the smartest thing to do. You don't want to leave your wares and your criminal activity known to the public. So assumingly somebody would have come out and gotten it right away. However, that's not what happened here. It just went in the house when TCD came home. And Your Honor, back to the inevitable discovery argument, what the judge did is the prospective analysis, which was specifically discussed in Wicks as being inappropriate. In Owens, the facts where it did work was law enforcement asked Wicks whether or not they could search the car for stereos. He said, yes, search the car. However, the consent was found to be unreasonable because of the circumstances in the oppressive atmosphere. However, because of his statement that if you don't give me consent, I'm going to get a warrant coupled with probable cause, if the individual didn't give the consent or the illegality that is extracting the permission to search didn't happen, he would have gotten a warrant. Here, there's no evidence that anyone was working on getting a warrant to search the house. And subject to questions to the court?
No further questions. You can reserve the remainder of time for rebuttal if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, we'll now hear from the amicus, please.
Chief Judge Baker, may it please the court, Curtis Hinka, amicus curiae, in support of the appellant Levi Kefauver. As detailed in our brief, we argue that the protective sweep of the Kefauver's residence infringed on Kefauver's right to privacy in accordance with the Fourth Amendment, and also in violation, and it was inappropriate for two reasons. First, the protective sweep was unconstitutional because it was performed in a non-arrest situation. Second, the protective sweep was unconstitutional because the agents began their sweep only after they accomplished the objective of their authorized intrusion. With regard to the first argument, the protective sweep being unconstitutional because it was performed in a non-arrest situation, under the Supreme Court's current protective sweep doctrine...
What's the theory behind protective sweep?
The protective sweep, Your Honor, is meant to ensure that the officers on the scene are not subject to dangerous individuals.
Might that be the case in situations other than when they are arrest being performed?
I would say no, Your Honor, because the court has
no risk to a law officer when they're conducting a search, for example, they have to be arresting somebody?
In that example, Your Honor, if the officers did encounter an individual, they would have reasons other than to perform a protective sweep, because a protective sweep, by definition, is a cursory sweep to ensure that there's no one on the scene citing the United States versus Smith, protective sweeps are defined as brief searches of premises during an arrest to ensure the safety of those on the scene,
why wouldn't a law enforcement official be even in more danger when a criminal is on its home turf than they would be in an arrest situation outside the home?
Your Honor, in this case, there is no facts that state that the officers had reason to believe.
That's a separate question. You appear to be making an across-the-board argument that Bowie should be confined to the facts of Bowie. and that all the circuits other than the Tenth Circuit that have ruled to the contrary are wrong.
Well, Your Honor, when there is no arrest, a search of the home can't be classified as a protective sweep because the very purpose is to ensure those on the scene are safe. When no arrest takes place, the police have not demonstrated that their safety is
concern. If it can only happen with an arrest, then you've got searches incident to arrest, and you've got protective sweeps. Is there any difference, or are they conflated into one?
There is a difference. With regard to searches incident to arrest, a protective sweep is different because the search of the premises for a person to be arrested is when you do a protective sweep. Once the person is found, an additional search must be justified, as you say, on other grounds. A protective sweep is not the same as incident to arrest because the incident to arrest is intended to protect the arresting officer from danger opposed to the arrestee and to protect the destruction of evidence.
Could I just be clear then? You're asking us to take a literal view and reading of Bowie then?
That is correct. And also,
than applying the theory and purpose behind it.
Well, with regard to the Ninth and the Tenth Circuit arguments, where they agree with the premise in Maryland versus Bowie, when there is no arrest, a search of a home, as I stated, cannot be classified as a protective sweep. In situations such as the one before this court, the sweep is performed outside of the arrest situation, which makes it appropriately more classified as a warrantless search and is both unnecessary and invalid.
What do we do about the five circuits that have held the other way?
Well, Your Honor, if you were to agree with the other circuits on that matter, I would concede that that my argument does not apply.
Is there a military reason why we should adopt one circuit view versus the other circuit view?
With respect to the arguments made by the Ninth and the Tenth Circuits, they're more faithful to the spirit and the letter that was within Maryland versus Bowie. The guidance of those circuits should guide this court and find that the protective sweep by Special Agent Roche and his team was unconnected to the arrest. There was no arrest.
That. My question was, is there any particular reason that in the military context we should favor one view or the other?
With regard to the military, I guess your argument would be moving along the lines of, are military members more dangerous? Is that correct?
I don't have an argument. I have a question. You're supposed to come back to me with the argument either there is no difference.
So I would argue that there is no difference because military members are protected by the Fourth Amendment as any other citizen. With regard to searches and protective sweeps, there still needs to be reasonable suspicion for the officers to believe that someone on the scene is posing a danger to themselves.
If there's no difference for military members, then why shouldn't we follow the majority of the circuit court's holdings, which is opposite to the position you're arguing?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, the authorization provided them to Special Agent Roche was specifically for the purpose of finding the box.
Then you're conflating the facts of this case with the general proposition that your amicus brief is based on, right, which I thought was that that Bowie involved a sweep incident to arrest, and that that's the only situation in which officers face danger, and that there's no danger if they go to a house to effectuate a warrant.
That is correct. And
so are you familiar with the Starnes case from the Seventh Circuit?
Yes, I believe that was cited by the Army Court.
So in that case, just to refresh your recollection, the officers had a warrant, right, to go search a particular building. They knew that there had been gunfire within a recent period of time from their search. They knew that there was two pit bulls on the premises. They went in to effectually search this premise. Why, under those circumstances, wouldn't they think that they needed to make a sweep to make sure that they were safe?
In that case, I would agree with you that they may have specific facts to support a search for other individuals, but
so
a protective
then your
sweep.
Your argument really isn't that Bowie shouldn't apply outside the arrest context. Your argument is that it shouldn't apply in this case.
You made two arguments in your brief.
Yes.
Which is the stronger of your two arguments?
The second argument, Your Honor.
Why don't you proceed with argument?
So, with regard to the protective sweep being unconstitutional because the agents performed that sweep only after they performed or accomplished the objective of their authorized intrusion, going back to the ruling in Bowie, law enforcement agents are able to perform, admittedly, a protective sweep, but only while they pursue the objective of the authorized intrusion. Once that objective has been completed, the officers no longer have authority to proceed any further.
What was the authorized purpose in this case? Because there's some ambiguity as to what was authorized and by whom.
Yes. So the military magistrate authorized Special Agent Roche and his team about a verbal authorization, and that verbal authorization was limited to the search of the immediate area where a package would be found. In his testimony, Special Agent Roche also stated that when he discussed it with Captain Robinson, he told him basically that it was once the package was delivered in the home and once it was taken in the house, they had authorization to go in there and just seize it, and also the immediate area. The box was found within 10 feet of the front door. The only authorization that they had once they found the box was to search just the immediate area and then leave. If they were to search any further, they would require a new search search warrant in that case.
Well, there wasn't a warrant in the first place, was there?
Not.
I thought the parties agreed on that.
Not for the home, specifically for the box.
Oh, yeah, there were, for the...
You mean authorization?
Yes.
Yeah, an
yes.
Authorization.
Yes. In one case in particular from this court, United States versus Kamsuk, Judge Efron, in concurrence joined by Judge Gerke, noted that once law enforcement officials complete the objective of the authorized intrusion, a protective sweep is unnecessary and therefore invalid. Allowing police to perform such protective sweeps after completing their authorized intrusion could allow police to circumvent the Fourth Amendment warrant requirement. The agents, once they entered the home, again, as we stated, they found the package within 10 feet of the door. However, Special Agent Roche and his team decided to go further, and they conducted what they classified as a security sweep of the residence. Special Agent Roche testified that they performed the sweep only to ensure that there was no one in the house with a gun in there trying to kill them. That was on the joint appendix at 108. However, the sweep was unnecessary because Special Agent Roche and his team completed the objective authorized to them by Captain Robinson.
What about the closet next to the box of dope?
You're referring to the
closet with two weapons, two unregistered weapons adjacent to the box of dope. Was that within the legitimate area of the sweep?
I would still argue no, Your Honor. Within the immediate vicinity of the box was found on a table further into the home in the foyer area. If they were searching in the closets, they weren't looking in the immediate vicinity of the box.
So they just have to hope that there isn't anybody in the closet or anybody else on the first floor, run in, grab the box, and run out as fast as they can.
Well, the officers followed, Your Honor, the officers followed the defendant's 16-year-old stepson into the home. They only had reason to believe he was the only person there. They had no, they were, like the defense counsel stated, they performed surveillance on the home for several hours. They didn't see anybody come in or leave, and it was a Thursday, and the military member presumably could have been at work, the same thing with his wife. In conclusion, Your Honor, there are no further questions, and for the reasons as I stated here and also in our brief, amicus curiae in support of the defendant, appellant Levi Kefauver, requests that this court find the protective sweep performed by Special Agent Roche and his team as inappropriate and overturn the Army Court's decision.
Before you depart, do you have a view on inevitable discovery that you wish to share?
I would defer to defense counsel. The only statement I would add to it would be that the exclusionary rule provides an incentive for police officers to follow the law. When an exception such as the inevitable discovery doctrine is created, the result is to remove that incentive for them. If police can demonstrate that they could have gotten a search warrant, what's the incentive for them to go through the procedural hassle of actually obtaining a warrant?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll now hear from counsel for the government, please.
Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Ben Hogan. Along with Major Dan Derner, we represent the government in this matter. We ask that the court affirm the findings and sentence for the following two reasons. One, the military judge did not abuse his discretion when he found the protective sweep and inevitable discovery doctrines applied to the evidence discovered in appellant's home. And two, appellate courts can use trial evidence to support the correctness of a pretrial suppression motion.
Would you state two again?
Appellate courts can use trial evidence to support the correctness of a pretrial.
Is that an issue we granted on?
How does it relate to the sweep issue?
The government doesn't believe that it really affects the outcome, but it does provide further specificity as to what was going on. For instance, the best example is that of what TCD was saying to the authorities when they showed up. On the trial record, he is saying cops can all die, whereas that did not come out at the Article 39A. The government just wanted to point out that it's been supported both in Supreme Court presence as well as this court and other appellate courts.
Is there any limit to that? Your brief makes the general argument that appellate courts shouldn't be limited to what was before the military judge, but it seems to be open-ended. So you could go ahead and say, well, the guy was convicted of having drugs, so this all must have played out. There must have been probable cause. I mean, that seems a no-lose situation for the government if you can bring in after-the-fact facts. What's the limit to your theory is what I'm asking.
Well, the limit is that the military judge initially has to rule in favor of the government. So all the facts that do come out and any facts that come up at trial could be applied to the correctness of his ruling, at least for a suppression motion, any sort of motion.
Go ahead.
Any sort of motion that could come up or that you could renew at trial. So something like this with a suppression motion under RCM 905, either party, if certain facts come up at trial, say something negative that the agent says, say he contradicts himself, what he said at the Article 39A, defense could renew that motion and have the military judge consider that.
Are you saying that the government is taking things in the light most favorable to the government, include a right by the government to post hoc rationalize stuff if they won the motion in the first place, or to post hoc bolster? Is that what you're saying? I'm not sure what you're saying.
I'm not sure
we granted on this issue, but anyway, go ahead.
They aren't trying to bolster it. I think when you're looking at whether you use the trial facts is whether the defendant is accorded the same rights. And it's actually much more stringent at trial as opposed to the 39A in terms of the rights that's being accorded. And also you're looking at whether you're getting to the actual facts of the situation as opposed to just looking at it in a vacuum.
Do we need to agree with you on this issue in order for you to prevail?
No, Your Honor.
Well, let's move on then. If you could explain exactly what the government believes the scope of the search authorization was, including when the dog should be used or when they shouldn't be used, so we kind of get a platform to work from.
Yes, Your Honor. The scope of the search authorization, as the CID agents understood it to be, was that they could find the box and use the military working dogs, and whatever the military working dogs identified throughout the home, they could search those areas.
So that was two separate authorizations, one to find the box, and the other, whatever the dogs alerted on anywhere in the house.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's the way the conversation went with the magistrate. Is initially they said, Special Agent SR said, we want to do a controlled delivery, and then, hey, can we use the dogs throughout the home? And that's what the magistrate had told him, or at least the way he understood it to be.
But the magistrate, when he testified, didn't say that, did he? He said, go in, find the box. You can look in the immediate vicinity of the box. And that's, you know, the dog doesn't come in unless you need the dog to find the box. They didn't need the dog to find the box because it was in plain view. Isn't that what he testified to?
I would disagree, Your Honor. I think the military judge had a hard time understanding exactly what the military magistrate was trying to say.
What did the military judge find? Why don't you work off the military judge's findings?
He did find that what eventually the military magistrate said at the end when the judge was clarifying it for him, that they could only take the dogs in as they were trying to find the package and sniff around where the package was.
In the immediate room?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is this a case where the magistrate thought he said one thing and the agents thought he said another?
Yes, and that applies to the inevitable discovery portion, whether they would have or could have obtained a warrant later on.
Counsel, since we didn't grant, as far as I understand it, on the inevitable discovery issue, can I go back to the issue that we did grant on, which is the sweep?
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree that the test from Bowie as applied in this context is whether the searching officer possesses a reasonable belief based on specific and articulable facts that the area to be swept harbors an individual that poses a danger to officers?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and that's a subjective test, right? Because it's whether the searching officer possesses a reasonable belief?
No, Your Honor. We believe that it's an objective standard.
Okay, then why does the test talk about a searching officer?
Bowie also talks about a reasonably prudent person in that situation. It's the facts that the officers are confronting at that particular situation, not what they're thinking, like why they're doing it.
Okay, well, let's assume that it doesn't matter, okay, that it could be an objective test or a subjective test. What particular specific and articulable facts would lead any officer under the facts of this case to believe that the area to be swept harbors an individual that poses a danger to the officers? What are the specific articulable facts that you're relying on?
Yes, Your Honor. There are several. The first being that TCD is threatening the officers as soon as they approach the door and identify their presence. He's telling them that they can die.
Okay, but he was, you agree that he was subdued and put in handcuffs after that?
And that's important. That shows how threatening he was being towards the officers.
He's threatening, but you'd agree that once he's in handcuffs, he no longer poses a threat.
Yes, Your Honor. However, he's...
So go on to your next point.
If I could just address that last point, he's essentially alerting people in the home that there's an unwelcome visitor coming in.
To the extent there are people in the home.
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
So how do you deal with the fact that they've had the house under surveillance for 3 hours? They deliver the package, ring the doorbell, do whatever they do, and nobody answers. First of all, do you agree the house was under surveillance for 3 hours and 20 minutes or some time like that?
No, Your Honor, we disagree in terms of the time of the surveillance. There's nothing in the record indicating that they started the surveillance at noon. They were scanning the package as it went along, and the package wasn't even scanned in as arrived.
So in the government's view, how long was the house under surveillance?
It's unclear as to when they started the surveillance, but approximately the time that they dropped off the package, which was 14:36, and the package was picked up at 15:20.
So at least from 14:36 to 15:20.
Mm-hmm. When the kid came home.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does the government agree with the statement that they rang the doorbell and did whatever one does when you deliver a package?
They did not ring the doorbell. They knocked on the door.
They knocked on the door?
Yes, okay. Your Honor.
Did the officers that do the search, I understand that at trial or at some point there was an expert that testified about, you know, that guns follow drugs, right? But did the officers actually that were involved in the search testify at any time that they believed that there was going to be people with guns in the house? During the motions hearings, did the officers that actually conducted the search, the sweep, right, did they testify at any time that they believed that there was armed and dangerous people in the home? Did they point to any fact that led them to believe that even if there was someone home, that they were armed and dangerous?
Only at the trial testimony did the postal inspector testify as to, in his experience, because he was certified as an expert, that guns follow drugs.
Right, but I'm talking about the motions hearing and the officers that actually conducted the search. Did they, for example, a lot of the circuit court cases involve people that are known to be part of a gang, right? They're known to be part of a drug cartel or a gang, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And there's oftentimes some facts such as recent gunfire or a car parked nearby that belongs to a gang member. Right, and under those circumstances, circuit courts have found that there was a reasonable and articulable factual basis to believe that there might be someone dangerous in the home. What sort of facts were there like that in this case?
The fact that you have an 8-pound package of marijuana going into the home, and 8 pounds of marijuana is known to be not just for personal consumption.
16-year-old cursing at the police.
Well, and there's additional factors. The fact that as soon as they enter the home, it smells of of marijuana. So you don't know whether someone's actually smoking the marijuana or disposing of the marijuana. That gives...
Based on the pictures and the rest of the testimony, it sounds like the whole household was smoking pot nonstop. I mean, that the house was permeated with marijuana.
The officers didn't know that the entire home was littered with marijuana at the point. And it's, you view it as they're entering the residence. Are they doing stuff to protect themselves based on the facts? And the facts are that...
And what are the specific... I repeat, Judge Ryan. An expert witness may have testified that guns follow drugs, but that's not a specific articulable fact available to the officers at the time. That's something that came up in trial.
Well, I would disagree, Your Honor, in the sense that they knew an 8-pound package of marijuana was going in there. And again, that's not for personal consumption. You have
I guess.
But that may be a specific articulable fact supporting that trafficking is going on. But that doesn't mean somebody's there and is going to shoot them.
Are there other specific and articulable facts other than that one?
Yes, Your Honor. In terms of the people being in there, Special Agent SR testified the fact that it was a 3-bedroom residence, so presumably 3 individuals were in there as ACCA.
Well, they knew that there was the 2 kids and the wife and the husband, right? I mean, they knew that going in. They knew that 4 people lived in the home.
What day of the week was it?
It was a Thursday, Your Honor.
And did they know that the appellant was in the armed forces?
Yes, Your Honor. And
is there any reasonable inference that can be made about someone who's in the armed forces in the middle of the day on a Thursday?
That they could be at work, but also if you look at the nature of how...
Reasonable inference be that they were at work or that they were at home?
They could possibly...
marijuana.
They could possibly be home, Your Honor, because of how close, they are to work. And also, as the postal inspector was testifying to how they, in his experience with drug trafficking, they track the packages. So
the government's view essentially is any time there's a controlled delivery, you can go into the house and do a toe-to-toe search.
No, Your Honor. We are not saying that there's a per se.
What are the other articulable facts here that would delimit a search or properly limit it?
That would be the fact that on the surveillance, no one, when they were doing the surveillance, they didn't see anyone exiting
the home. But that
proves
a negative. I mean, that's like a negative. We saw no one. That doesn't raise a reasonable inference that there's someone. The fact that you see no one doesn't raise a reasonable inference that there's someone.
You can still make the rational inference that someone is still in the home by the fact that no one's left.
But if you saw them go in and they didn't leave... But, I mean, you don't have it. This isn't like the cases that I've talked about, right, where they see someone go in, right, or they see someone moving, or they believe because of cars parked around there that there might be someone, that there probably is someone in there, right? We have a weekday with a member of the armed forces that presumably the reasonable inference is that they're at work, right? We have a knock on a door and no one answering. We have 8 pounds of marijuana sitting on a doorstep. Where's the reasonable inference that there's someone in the house?
When you're knocking on the door, there's a rational inference that they aren't necessarily going to answer the door or even hear the door.
That's another negative inference, just like the last one. It seems to me all you've got here is a big box of dope and a mouthy kid. You got a big box of dope and a mouthy kid. Buey says you can conduct a cursory visual inspection of the areas immediately adjoining what you're looking for. Other than that, you need articulable facts. And what they said, the cursory visual inspection they conducted consisted of pulling open closet doors, looking under beds, and conducting a generalized search for evidence. Now, how is that a legitimate sweep under Buey?
It's important that who is answering the door, the fact that a minor is answering the door and it's the parents, the adults in the situation are unaccounted for.
Working. I mean, that would be my reasonable inference, that the kids are coming home from school and the parents are at work.
There wasn't any facts at the time that the appellant's wife actually worked, and...
Right, but here's the problem, counsel, right? Which is, on the one hand, we have all these cases where it's not marijuana, it's like hard drugs, right? It's crack cocaine, it's cocaine, it's gang members, there's guns, there's gunfire, there's Lincoln Navigators and bling bling everywhere, right? And on the other hand, we have a neighborhood house with a box of marijuana and a kid answering the door without anything else. Right, and so on the one hand, you can understand officers being afraid, right? Because gang members involved in selling large quantities of hardcore drugs are dangerous, right? But how do you show that level of danger with a cursing kid that is put in handcuffs?
Well, the
without anything more.
The approximate value of that package was $20,000 to $30,000. And disagree in terms of whether you would not protect, you know, that.
Well, where's the gang connection? Where's the violence connection? Where's the gunfire connection? Where's that there's other people because of our cars connection? Where is there anything?
Was there any evidence that they were known to have weapons in the house? They eventually found weapons, but did the military police state that they were aware there were weapons in the house?
No, Your Honor. They checked beforehand to see if any weapons were registered to the residents and didn't find any.
And the records were replete, right, with complaints about they didn't mow their grass, they didn't pick up their garbage, they didn't pick up dog poop, they left basketball nets, but there's no complaints about loud parties, noise, guns, anything like that, right? I mean, they're in a neighborhood where people are watching them and they're not very good neighbors. Right, but I mean, other than those sorts of things, what is there in the record to suggest that they were criminals, let alone gang-related, let alone violent?
An 8-pound package is going into the home, and courts have found that, you know, guns follow drugs, and this has been several different appellate courts from Starnes, Garcia, Cash, and Houck.
Well, guns may follow drugs, but does that allow you to search the whole house and look under beds and pull open closet doors when you've already found the stuff you're looking for?
It's a combination of all the factors. The fact that you have a threatening individual that you're confronted with.
A threatening individual who's out of commission.
But you don't know where the adults are in that particular situation. The other
well,
two individuals.
We're back in the same do loop.
Can I ask you a different question, counsel? Assuming that we disagree with you about the sweep, and I'm not saying that we do, but I'm just saying if you assume that, with respect to the inevitable discovery, and we didn't grant on that issue, did we? It was assigned issue 2, and we only granted assigned issue 3, which was this issue. What, in your view, do we do with the inevitable discovery issue since we didn't grant on it?
I believe it still factors in because whether you have the protective sweep. At least ACIM, both the military judge, ruled that because the protective sweep was valid, then based off of that probable cause, you have the inevitable discovery for...
Right. So if we disagree with you and undo it, does the CCA have to look at it again? What I'm saying is the rest of their opinion valid if we invalidate the premise upon which they founded their inevitable discovery ruling?
I'm unsure. I would assume they would just because they would have to look at whether inevitable discovery applies from the moment the protective sweep took place.
Well,
whether
this those occurred on Fort Campbell, did it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
And does that help, hurt, indifferent in terms of what officers should reasonably have known or suspected? Does that make it more likely that there's a violent gun confrontation that's about to occur less likely, or it's a wash?
It's a wash because danger's everywhere. There are definitely many cases where there are violence on military installations. And in this particular circumstance, I know it was after the fact, but they did have weapons, unregistered weapons, in the residence, which is clear that they were trying to
protect
themselves.
Neighbors had feared them. You think on a military installation, the neighbors might say something. Is that a fair inference?
As to what's going on?
If they felt threatened by their neighbors?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. What's the government's answer to the question of why there was a rush to issue the authorization and do so orally rather than in writing?
because of, as the postal inspector testified to, in his experience, a lot of people that traffic in narcotics and drugs know how to turn around packages if they suspect that anything is amiss, and that's what they were trying to protect against. So they were trying to scan the package in as they were going along to make sure that whoever was checking the website to see where the package was wasn't alerted to the fact.
Does the government have a view, and this is a rhetorical question, as to whether it would be better to issue written authorizations rather than guess as to what was orally authorized?
The government's not going to vouch that the practices of the military magistrate were the best practices. And it always is better to put it in writing than to issue it verbally. But the evidence is clear that based off the testimony of the agents themselves, as well as what they did, the fact that they waited 15 minutes to go in with the military working dogs, that's what they understood to be the case, that's what they understood was authorized. I see that I'm out of time.
I have one question.
Please.
On following up on inevitable discovery, mm-hmm. Why would you get a warrant when you've already done two searches and you found what you were looking for and a lot else besides?
Because they wouldn't believe that they had authorization to keep going.
Well, I mean, the government's case here sounds like the grossest kind of bootstrapping. We had a limited visual inspection, which mutated into looking in closets and under beds, which gave somehow rise to probable cause, which, of course, you would have gotten a warrant for had you not already discovered it.
They would have had the probable cause as soon as they entered the residence, the fact that they were smelling the marijuana. But the evidence is clear.
Probable cause to search for what? The smell of marijuana may give rise to probable cause search for marijuana, but you've already found it. It's sitting there.
But it would allow them to go throughout the rest of the home. And they did obtain search warrants later on for the vehicles. So they clearly knew or understood the parameters to be that they could bring the dogs through later on. So they were contacting the military magistrate. They weren't trying to evade the requirement. I think that's what's important, is was there an intent to evade the Fourth Amendment? And there wasn't. They went to him beforehand. They thought that they had it. Apparently they didn't. But for the vehicles, they knew that they didn't have the warrant. So they actually went back to the military magistrate to get it.
So are you arguing that the good faith exception applies? I mean, that last argument you made sounds more like a good faith exception to the warrant requirement, that they thought they had the authority to go in.
I guess what counts, believe that's probably a minor argument that the government would put forth. However, the only thing detracting about that is what military judge ruled, in that the military magistrate's authorization was just limited to not searching the home with the military working dogs. But the good faith element does play into inevitable discovery, as you see with Wicks, where they consulted the legal officer three times and didn't get a warrant and just kept searching the phone itself. Whereas here, they were trying to follow the rules. It just happened that they misunderstood exactly what the military magistrate was saying. And that's very clear on the record by the fact that he's changing his story five different times as to what he told them. Pending
your
question.
All right, your time is up and the questions are up for the moment.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll now hear from Amicus for the government. And I'm sure you've enjoyed waiting to go last.
Yes, I have, thoroughly.
Relaxing experience.
Having a great time. Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Veronica Sustick. First, I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to come before you today as amicus. Your Honors, the protective sweep that agents conducted in this case was appropriate.
Can I ask you, you've just heard the government's argument and you've read their brief. How do you, if at all, do you distinguish your position from that of the government? There's no correct answer here. Is your position in variance with the government, and if so, in what way? And you can take a moment to think that through.
Sure.
Thank you. And while you're thinking about that, why don't you tell us what the key fact is that would support the government's position?
So first, I don't believe that we do differ in any way in our position. Was there more to that question? Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Okay.
So now we're going to ask you questions about similar to the ones you have just heard.
Sure.
And what would you say then to the fact that the house was under surveillance, and would the officers have reason to believe someone was in the house when they have the house under surveillance, and they knock on the door, they leave a valued item on the stoop, which if someone was expecting a valued item like that, they might come out and fetch before one of the local dogs does or something. Why should that lead to a reasonable inference that there was someone in the house?
Well, Your Honor, they admittedly did not see any activity in the house, but they didn't see anyone come out, and this was a multi-family or a multi-story family home, so there were at least four people who could have been in the house. They didn't know the whereabouts of any of the people, but anybody could have been in there. And that's just one of the factors leading to their reasonable suspicion that somebody might have been in the house. They also had the fact that the appellant had been mailed this 8-pound package of marijuana that people trained in drugs and drug identification had identified as such, and also a military working dog. They also, once they entered the house, had the aggressive screaming teenager who may have been alerting other occupants to their presence. And of course, there was the smell of marijuana that to police officers indicated that somebody may have been smoking recently. And I think that based on all of these circumstances together, officers could reasonably have concluded that there may have been someone else in the house, and that a protective sweep was justified for the safety of all the officers, for the safety of the young man that they had just handcuffed, and for the safety of the military working dog and the handlers who would be coming in shortly. And I think importantly to this point is that the government actually has a fairly low burden. They just have to show that there is a reasonable suspicion that there was someone in the house. It's not probable cause. And the reason for that is that, as the Supreme Court recognized in Bowie in affirming the legality of protective sweeps generally, there is an inherent risk that officers face in entering a suspect's home. And while, as it happens, officers were not at risk in this case, there is that risk, and officers
even though they only need to have, like, a reasonable belief, you'd agree that there's another part to the test, right, which is that they need to have specific and articulable facts that would lead a reasonable officer to believe that there's a dangerous individual in the house.
Yes,
right?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the problem. So how do you overcome that problem? What answer do you have that you think is better than or builds upon what government counsel gave us?
I don't know if it's better than or builds upon, but I do think that the fact that when they came into the house, the stepson was screaming, and as you pointed out, he was screaming, cops can die or kill the cops. And then on top of that, there was the smell of marijuana, and as you pointed out, there was marijuana all over the place. It was everywhere, but the officers at that point did not know that. And so they were reasonable in thinking that there is someone here, and
did any of them testify as to any particular fact that they actually thought that there was someone there, as opposed to a general statement, we conducted this sweep to make sure there was no one there? Because you'd agree there's a difference.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, is there any testimony anywhere that they actually thought there was someone else in the house?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
Belief on? Okay.
I don't know.
Fair enough.
And counsel, it's required not that just someone else be in the house, but that person pose a danger.
Sure.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it can't be that, as has been articulated a number of times, that a person is in there. It also has to be a showing that that person poses a danger. Correct?
Yes. And so I think on that point, this particular situation, as the government pointed out, was that an 8-pound box of marijuana had been delivered to the house. And as he said, guns follow drugs. And many courts have held that. The experts in this case, unrebutted, testified that in their experience, in their training, there will often be violence associated with drugs. And so in this case, you know,
so counsel, under that rationale, is it your view that any time there is a controlled delivery or a warrant to search a house for drugs, that in either of those cases, if the proposition is that guns follow drugs, and in those situations, in every instance, right, in every instance when there could be someone else in the house, that therefore the officers may do a protective sweep of the entire house?
No, Your Honor, that's not our position.
So what's
the limiting factor here?
What changes that?
Well, in this case specifically, it's the fact that they walked into the house, the boy was screaming, possibly alerting somebody to their presence, and then there was the smell of marijuana.
How does that connect to the point that Judge Olson made, which is, even if that was enough to believe that there was another person in the house, how is that enough to believe that that person is dangerous?
I think it's...
Is it just because it's drugs? And if so, what is the limiting fact? It doesn't seem like there would be one.
The drugs are what sort of raised the hackles of the officers in the first place. And that is a very important factor. If they were going just for a stolen bike, there would be far less reason to believe that anybody in the house would be actually dangerous, and there would be less reason for a protective sweep. But I think that what's important here is that they had, they had a very large amount of marijuana, and they also had reason to believe that there were people in the house, and that led to a reasonable suspicion that there was somebody. They didn't have to know that anybody there would be aggressive, but the fact is that there's a risk. And
did the agents testify to any of that, what you have just said?
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry.
That because there was a large amount of drugs, because the expert testified that guns follow drugs, that they believed that there might be a dangerous person in the house. Did any of the agents testify to any of that? Or did they just testify that we did a protective sweep?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
Does the record reflect whether the agents were of the view that the son was alerting? Did they view it as that, or is that an after-the-fact suggestion? Reading the record now, we can say the son may have been alerting others, or this is a neutral question, or is there anything in the record that indicates the officers at the time thought the son might be alerting somebody else?
I don't recall, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
What about the scope of the, even if you admit that there's some legitimate sweep, they walked in the house, they handcuffed the mouthy kid, and the first thing they saw was the box of dope. Okay, search over. We have what we came looking for. Now, any more than a cursory visual, your cursory visual inspection gave you what you were looking for. Well, wasn't that the end of it?
The cursory visual inspection was of the places where people might be hiding. They weren't digging through drawers or looking for evidence, and S.A. Roche even testified that as soon as he had established that there was nobody in the room, he moved on to the next room. But I think it's important that Bowie does not place a limit on the percentage of the house that can be searched, because it's up to an officer.
It doesn't place a limit, but it places a requirement for specific articulable facts that let you in there in the first place. You know, you've got your sweep of the area where you found what you were looking for. Okay, that's done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still looking for specific articulable facts other than a mouthy kid and the smell of dope.
I guess that's...
That's it.
That's it, but
okay.
Respectfully, I think...
Fair enough. Thank you.
Sure.
If this were a 10-story building, would they have been able to search all 10 stories in the protective sweep?
Is it like a mansion, like everything's all connected?
Yeah, they're all connected. It's one big 10-story house.
But I'm really not sure. That would, I guess
I'm wondering,
that would be a closer...
The limit. I mean, these guys went up to the second floor. They looked in the shelves, in the closets. I mean, where do we draw the line?
Well, I think that's obviously a closer case at some point. You know, when you're on the ninth floor and you haven't found anybody, maybe that would present a problem. But here, they didn't, you know, dig through the closet. The closet door was open, and there was a smoking device sitting on top of the shelf. But I think what limits it is that there were facts here that could lead a reasonable officer to believe that there was someone in there. There's
okay. Now, just list those facts for us.
So there's the screaming teenager.
Okay.
Alerting someone. The smell of marijuana in the house. Ooh. And then the fact that they didn't see anyone come out of the house.
Three. That it?
At what point in the protective sweep did they come upon the two weapons in the closet?
I'm not sure.
They were on the second floor, right?
Yes.
So you're standing by the three, which is fine. That's your position.
Yeah, I will have to do that, yes.
I see your time is out. Would you like to stay longer?
No, Your Honor. I'll step down. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, very much. We will now have rebuttal.
Your Honor, I'd like to clear up some of the facts that came out. First of all, my initial 3 hour and 20 minutes, the timeline, if you look at the joint appendix between 39 and 40, Special Agent Roach testified that between 10:30 and 10:45 is when the dog did the sweep on the boxes at CID. He then immediately went to the part-time military magistrate, and immediately after that, started his surveillance. I place at approximately 11:30. The court can do with that as they please, but that would put it at 3 hours and 16 minutes. And then you additionally have almost 45 minutes of the box sitting on the front porch. The second is that I'd like to clear up what Captain Robinson actually testified to, the part-time military magistrate. He said in the joint appendix at 85, I set the box, the package goes into the house, you may search the room depending on if you go in right after it. You can search that immediate area that you find the package, and that's the limit of your search. At 89, he says, and that's why he was asked the question by the military judge, and that's why you limit the search and the verbal authorization to the room where the package was found. Is that correct? Yes. Finally, he said, I said you don't have probable cause to search other places in the house because you found the drugs you were looking for. That was immediately after a question by the military judge of what happens if they find the box as soon as they get into the home. And I'd also like Judge Stuckey, I believe you were trying to figure out where the pistols and the long guns were. If you look at the joint appendix supplemental joint appendix at 41, it's an evidence property custody document. It explains that the rifles were found on the second floor in the closet, and the handguns were found on the first floor inside of a box. And that first floor closet, it's not immediately in the grab area. It's, I believe, a couple feet down the hallway. And for those pictures, it's in the joint appendix somewhere around 422, 423. Because 422 will give the court a good idea of exactly how far in the house the box was. It wasn't 10 feet as testified, it's closer to three.
If there had been a weapon lying out in the open when they went in the house, which I understand is not the case, but if there had been, would they have had a reasonable basis in your view to do a protective sweep?
No, Your Honor, they have a reasonable belief in to seize the contraband, the pistol, but once that was seized, that's it, unless they start finding more.
You agree that that would be a closer case?
A little closer, Your Honor, but if it's immediately inside the house.
I mean, there's a gun there, right? So part of what we're concerned about is that there not just has to be a person, but that there has to be some reason to believe that they are that they could harm the officers. I mean, the presence of gun changes the dynamic, doesn't it?
To one prong of the argument, Your Honor. Under Bowie, they find, the court found that you have to have a reasonable, articulable belief that somebody's in the home that can do you harm. If the gun's there, then somebody can do you harm. And there's reason to believe that if somebody was in the home, they mean you harm. But with no evidence that anybody's in the home, no reasonable, articulable belief testified by any law enforcement officer that they believe.
But you'd agree it's a closer case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, and they did a search.
That's okay.
No, didn't they search the records and find there were no registered weapons there?
Yes, Your Honor.
Therefore, it follows that any weapon found there was unregistered and hence contraband.
And it would be a little more that
something listens. More like gang activity in some of the other cases that we're talking about, right?
Possibly, Your Honor, yes.
And if the record, instead of having complaints about failure to mow the lawn and pick up dog poop, et cetera, had complaints about, you know, violence, brawling, noise, that also could change the facts of the case.
Yes, Your Honor, but in this case, it's not just no complaints. We're on Fort Campbell, Kentucky. We're not in Illinois, we'd be Wardlow, where they're in a high crime neighborhood where there's drug deals going on all the time.
I'd like to ask you the same question I asked the government counsel about the inevitable discovery issue. You'd agree that the CCA's ruling on the inevitable discovery issue bootstrapped on its view of the propriety of the protect of the sweep, right?
They used, I believe, Your Honor, inevitable discovery to discuss the second part of the sweep, because after this, well, the second search, because after the sweep was over, they left, got the dogs, looked in a teapot, looked in every box in the garage. I believe they used that to kind of cover everything, because...
What in your view, given that we did not grant on the inevitable discovery issue, do we do about, if we agree with you about the protective sweep, do we do with the inevitable discovery issue?
Your Honor, my argument is that that goes to prejudice, because if the sweep is good, but the sweep was found to be inappropriate, but inevitable discovery saves it, there's no prejudice to my client. However, because the retrospective as opposed to prospective analysis, no one was trying to get a warrant. Even if the search was saved, everything after the search would be suppressed, and there would be a different ruling of the court.
Well, the question is, should we address the inevitable discovery issue, or should we send it back to the CCA if we were to agree with
you? For them to consider it in light of a different fact. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, Your Honor, but I believe that this court suppresses all the evidence found during the sweep. The Army Court's decision that, well, looking back, Special Agent Roach would have gotten a search authorization would kind of take any problem with the sweep out. It'll be suppressed, but then saved again by the inevitable discovery doctrine.
And therefore,
there's no harm to my client with the sweep, other than the constitutional violation. But again, it would be saved because
who should address that? Should we give the CCA the opportunity to address that? Because their initial holding was intertwined with their ruling on the protective sweep.
Also, Your Honor, if the protective sweep goes away, part of the inevitable discovery doctrine, decision by the Army Corps relies on some of the evidence found during the sweep.
We're asking you a three-pronged question, which is, if you were to prevail on the sweep, should the CCA reconsider its inevitable discovery ruling? Should we assess inevitable discovery? Or do you flat out lose anyway because there was inevitable discovery?
I apologize, I'm taking them out of order, Your Honor. We don't flat out lose because the Army Court's view of the inevitable discovery doctrine was wrong. This court can rule on it and say that in accordance with Wicks, no one was actually trying to get a warrant, therefore it wasn't inevitable, or they can send it back to the CCA to rule in accordance with Wicks.
Does that answer the court's question? That at least answered my version of the question.
Thank you, Your Honor. And Judge Ryan, again, to go back to the bling, the neighborhood, the what's going on, it's Fort Campbell. We're not talking about a high-crime neighborhood where, in numerous of the cases...
I understand that. I was just testing the limits of your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're out of time. Is there something you'd like to wrap up with?
Excuse me, Your Honor. I didn't see the light. I apologize, but subject to any questions of the court.
There are no questions. Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel, all counsel, both the amici and appellants and government's counsel. And what we're going to do now is put the court in whatever we do after we hear something in recess. The case will be under advisement. We're then going to stay in place and do a Q&A session. And I have both the permission of the dean and by order of the court, you're allowed to be late to class or skip class and not do your homework for the rest of the week in order to stay for question and answers. Okay, clerk.
All rise. The court stands adjourned until further order of the court. Please be seated.